Welcome to History in 6, a place where we sample history in 6-minute increments. I'm your host, Team Lendl. Today we're going to talk about commerce in the early colonies. Time is short. Let's jump into it. Early lack of interest by the English government led to rapid growth of legislative assemblies with these colonial franchises. Under Charles II's reign, they began to take a closer look into these colonies. Of course, their main concern wasn't the form of government. Their main concern was regulated trade. The Act of 1616, also known as the Navigation Act of 1660, was a law passed by the English Parliament to regulate trade within the entire British Empire. The goal of the Act was to promote self-sufficiency within the British Empire by controlling colonial trade. They put restrictions on what goods could be imported or exported on English or colonial ships with English crews. Certain goods, which they called enumerated commodities, such as sugar, tobacco, cotton, wool, indigo, hemp, rice, copper, iron, these could only be shipped to England or other English colonies. They couldn't be shipped anywhere else in the world, which reduced trade opportunities for the colonies and increased the tensions between the colonists and the English crown, especially the South, where almost all of their staples were in the enumerated commodities. For northern commodities, fish was a major export, but it was kept out of England by high tariffs. Instead, they traded to the West Indies and southern Europe. The West Indies traded food and lumber for sugar, molasses, rum, and of course slaves. But the biggest problem for trade in the early colonies was a lack of coin. The English pound, the English shilling, weren't there. The prevailing economic philosophy in Europe at this time was mercantilism. Here, the nations accumulated wealth through favorable trade balances, meaning they exported more goods than they imported. England saw its colonies as a source of raw materials and market for finished goods, which created trade imbalances. The colonies constantly imported more manufactured goods from England than they exported raw materials back. This meant there was less English currency flowing into the colonies. The money colonists earned by selling their raw materials often stayed in England to pay for imported goods coming back. The second reason for this limited coinage was because England itself was facing a coin shortage, and they wanted to keep the valuable metals, gold and silver, in England itself. Therefore, large-scale trade had to be done by draft and bill. Everything else was done by barter. You traded goods and services with each other instead of using currency. This included things like exchanging corn for tools or using furs to pay taxes. Early Harvard records showed that some of their bills were paid by produce, livestock, or pickled meat. All kinds of questionable methods were used to deal with this shortage of cash. Virginia and Maryland used receipt for tobacco deposited in warehouses as cash. Wampum was used by Native Americans as a form of currency, and that was just shells and beads. The colonial government began to create its own paper currency. They issued what was known as quote-unquote bills of credit. These bills were essentially promissory notes, meaning that they were a promise by the issuing colony to redeem the note for a specific value, typically in silver or gold coins. However, unlike modern paper money, these bills weren't always backed by a sufficient amount of precious metals that were in reserve. Their value was based on the creditworthiness of the issuing colony and the expectation that they could be redeemed for coins in the future. The colonies often printed these bills of credit to finance public projects, military expenses, or address temporary cash shortages. These bills of credits were typically issued by one specific colony, and it wasn't necessarily readily traded by other colonies. This created a tremendous complexity just in intercolonial trade. And mostly this money was worthless because it wasn't backed by anything real. In these early days, American money was really crappy and highly distrusted, something that became deep-rooted in the American psyche. Banks were also pretty sketch. They were fairly primitive, and they issued credit based on real estate security. Parliament in England, they didn't help the situation any. They didn't supply more currency. And then, in fact, they made it worse because the Currency Act of 1751 banned the New England colonies from printing paper money. In 1764, the Currency Act extended the restriction to all colonies. It didn't completely prohibit printing money, but it forbade colonies from designating their paper currency as a legal tender for public or private debts. That meant the bills wouldn't be guaranteed acceptance for repayment, making them pretty much useless. Which, of course, pissed off the colonists and was fairly ineffective because they already had 22 million in local bills in circulation. This is just an example of how government on both sides of the Atlantic would not necessarily work together and would create points of contention that eventually led to the American Revolution. If you've enjoyed this episode, tell a friend about us. If you haven't already, subscribe to get future content. And as always, have a great day if you want to.